You know what? I'm mad today. Come on, let me show you why. Hello, everyone. Dr. Chris Martinson here, and we're here today with the Nothing Show, and we're going to have just nothing but bland, inoffensive things to talk about here, non-offensive titles. That's what we got to insert here. Why? Because, look, I've been doing this for, it's going to be a year in a little while. It feels like it's at least 9 months of reporting, and I've been doing everything I can to bring you solid science. It's all backed up. I can, you know, source every single thing I've gone by. And despite that, I've been fighting the machine, as it were. I've been fighting Google, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, all of these. They all want to suppress the information that I'm trying to bring you, and it's just data. And this data would have saved thousands of lives, tens of thousands of lives, maybe hundreds of thousands of lives, as well as unnecessary suffering from all the COVID long haulers and people who got damaged because it didn't have to be this way. Yeah, I'm annoyed. And so we just found out in the last couple of days here, what really Twitter is up to. This isn't political. Remember, I'm not partisan. I don't do left-right stuff, but I am going to notice something that just happened here because I think it's emblematic of why it's been so hard to get simple data about certain, let's say, compounds that can't be named because I'll get in trouble and I'll run afoul of the censors in this whole thing. But this is emblematic, I think, what just happened here. So take a peek with me. Let's take a look here. First, the New York Post writes an article, right? And it's pretty major circulation. It's a newspaper. They write an article. It's an investigative article. So they've got investigative reporting in there. And look at this. I, an editor at the New York Post, one of the nation's largest papers by circulation, can't post one of our own stories that details corruption by a major party presidential candidate. Twitter said, nah, this tweet couldn't be sent because this link has been identified by Twitter or our partners. Our partners? That's a little vague. Hey, who are you dating? Partners? That's weird. As potentially harmful, visit our help center to learn more. Yeah, I'm sure that's going to be a really useful thing to do. Yeah, I'm sure their help centers are all helpful. This is the state of the world that we're in. So when big social media can do this, can take a major newspaper and say, you know what, you're violating our community guidelines, whatever the story is. That's how bad it is. So I don't feel personally targeted here. It's not like, you know, any of this big bad system came after little old me. But this is where we are in this story right now. And if you haven't seen The Social Dilemma, which is a Netflix special, go ahead and watch that. It's good as far as it goes, but it details the extent to which these social media giants are way too powerful for their own good. But here they are actively interfering in people being able to share information. In this case, a major newspaper doing investigative reporting. And I don't know what kind of country you want to live in or what kind of world you want to live in, but even if this was totally bad reporting, I think it's an appropriate thing to say, well, let's talk about it, right? It's the same style and substance I would take with the thing that can't be named, that thing. At any rate, because you might run afoul of these censors. So let's carry on. Does it get worse than that? It does. At the same time, Twitter even blocked a government website. Look at that. Judiciary GOP. So they've blocked a government website because this link may be unsafe, they said. So now Twitter's an arbiter of what good medical science is, what appropriate investigative journalism is, and which branches of the government are allowed to be posted. It's just crazy. It's crazy. So my question to you is, what chance do we think of getting anything right in this story, such as those medicines that can't be named, or what's happening ecologically in this world, or what's happening with the gross division between rich and poor and all these? If we can't talk about these issues because they're offensive or something like that, what do we do? So Twitter's out there busy removing posts, and the posts were removed because someone took offense, right? So it's like snowflakes in summer. No chance of, I don't know. I like this one. I thought that was pretty clever, so I put that up for you. But at any rate, this is just too much at this point in time. It's too much. It's just getting to be too much when we can't even have basic information being shared without it going through some nebulous sensors who you can't see, you can't talk to, visit the help center, read our community guidelines, which say nothing, right? It's just insane at this point in time. So we're being given, this is a really bad situation. Like, this is really bad. Freedom of speech is a really important cornerstone, especially in the rough and tumble world of science, science reporting. Listen, scientists think they know what's going on. They get it wrong. It gets refined. You have to let go of treasured hypotheses. You know, all of this as we try and work towards a workable theory. Without that free scrum, the rough and tumble of ideas out there, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work, right? So this is a very bad trend. Not happy with it at this point in time. So, hey, guess what? I'm going to have to take next week off. And the reason is that I have a seminar to attend to. We have well over 1,000 people now signed up for it. Adam and I are going to be delivering this seminar. That's next weekend. I have a lot of things to do to get ready for that. So my attention has to be devoted towards giving these people the best possible seminar we possibly can do. And we got some really great guests showing up at this thing. If you're at all interested, some of my personal heroes here, from everything from Joel Salatin, the farmer, Grant Williams, the extraordinary economic articulator. He's so articulate. On and on and on. Everybody on our guest list is just amazing. All right. So I said I was going to have a little bit, get some of my anger out. This is why. This is the stock market today. Stock market. I got to put air quotes up on this. Air quotes. Why? Because if you look at this chart, you look at the far left side of this chart, you see that the stock market opened down and opened down for 1 minute. And this is what's been happening. The Federal Reserve, the PPT, the Plunge Protection Team, whatever's going on, they step in and they rescue that market instantly. And they just, that was it. The lowest minute of this market was the first minute. That's how they work. And they've just been pumping to get the stock market up. You listen to NPR, you listen to the Wall Street Journal, they're like, oh, investors are cheered by, as if there were investors involved. This is a wall of money. The Federal Reserve is printing walls of money with the other central banks. And what's the effect of that? Well, people feel a little better. Maybe they'll spend more money at Target next weekend. But you know what's really happening? Yeah, the billionaires, they added 26% to their net worth since the start of the COVID crisis. They, over $2 trillion of new wealth flowed to these people right here, like Jeff Bezos, right? Like the last thing he needs is another few hundred billion thrown his way. But that's what the Federal Reserve is doing. So if you really want to know what I think about this, the Federal Reserve can just themselves. They are a bunch of and they are ruining this country. And I really just think that they need to just stop doing this. Just stop it. Just let go of this thing. I don't care. You know, the world's on fire. It's like, what? We got to make the billionaires more billionaire-y? Just And the reason I care about that is because, and I think the reason you should care about this too, is as Plutarch said thousands of years ago, an imbalance between the rich and the poor is the oldest and most fatal ailment of all republics. So while the Federal Reserve is busy printing money and shoving it into the market so they never go down again and we don't all get depressed about that, what they're really doing is creating an extraordinary wealth gap. And this is corroding our country and is going to ruin things. It's going to ruin the future. That's why I care. So with all of that said, it's time to become resilient. That's the purpose of all of the work that I do in the world. So what is resilience? Well, it's the capacity to recover quickly from difficulties or toughness. And there's all different forms of resilience. Here's a few, five of them: psychological, emotional, physical, community resilience, financial, things like that. And as well, just looking at psychological resilience, that's the process of adapting well in the face of adversity, trauma, tragedy, threats, or significant sources of stress, such as family and relationship problems, serious health problems, or workplace or financial stressors. I mean, that's a pretty big list there, right? Well, we're coming into an era of time where you're going to need a lot of resilience to get through it, just a ton, okay? So look, you know, because the Federal Reserve's printing like they are, because, you know, the world is going the way it is, I really think it's going to be more and more turbulent as we go forward. And I'm not hopeful anymore, because now you can't even be a major newspaper without getting censored because you're saying the wrong things or something like that. It's not good. So what's the first rule of being resilient? Well, you don't give up. You just gotta, you just. All right. I love it when the coat hangers get involved. Yeah. It's a resilient kitty. He doesn't give up. All right. All right. There it is. That's it. Thanks. I needed a laugh. I really did. All right. So, hey, you know, it's not, we could get through this COVID thing, but first we'd have to, you know, not censor ourselves and use common sense and do all these things, which frankly I'm giving up on at this point in time as being anything that's going to happen. So what can I tell you? There's an information war going on right now, and I've been fighting it the whole way. A lot of people have been fighting it. I can see more and more people fighting it, but big tech social media, y'all have really lost the plot line in this story. I don't know what you think you're doing, but whatever story you're telling yourselves in your little focus group, internal working committees, it's the wrong story. You have gone way off the rails on this whole thing. Social media has taken the side of policy and protecting institutional reputations over allowing proper data to be discovered and shared so that we can advance as quickly as possible. Because of that, I think hundreds of thousands of deaths and a lot of needless suffering happened. And so we need even better information to navigate these coming times. There's a lot that we have to be doing. But our chances of doing that in time are approaching zero because time is running out in this story right now. That's my view. Listen, I might be wrong, but I'm not confused. If we have to fight monopolies that are unanswerable to anybody, there's nobody you can call, there's no way to, in any way sort of shape their opinion about things, there's really no there to fight. What do you do? It's very disempowering and discouraging because we're really on the wrong track at this point in time as a people. It really doesn't have to be this way. In the strongest possible terms, please, you need to get resilient at this point in time. You need to figure out for yourself all the things that you need in order to be safe from COVID. You need financial resilience, emotional resilience. I want your home to be resilient because I just don't see that this is going to get any better before it gets a lot worse in this particular story. And the battles that we've waged here, us, to try and figure out how to bring these medicines that can't be named, these treatments that can't be named without running afoul of the system that wants to not have these things be named, that tells us everything we need to know about where we are in this story. But now we've reached crazy town, Toontown. You know, it's just, we're off the ends of it here. So please take care of yourself. Be well. Have a good weekend. Remember, I'm taking next week off. I will see you after that. Not sure if I'm going to carry on the COVID coverage or not, because it's just, what is there left to say? It's just insane at this point in time. So we'll see what we pick up with then. So be well. For those of you who I'm going to see at the seminar, can't wait to see you there. It's going to be fantastic. Otherwise, see you next time.
We trust the social media world to be able to share stories. Well, we learned this week, you can't share stories. The Blaze was flagged for advertising a show about election fraud. We were throttled and flagged for an ad, for tweeting out a message that said, you have to watch tonight's show. It's on election fraud. Wait, what? We were flagged because headlines can be deceiving. You need more context here. Yes, and we have it at 9 p.m. Eastern. I mean, excuse me? So why is this happening? Well, let's just go through some of the people that work at these places. Jack Dorsey, he's the CEO of Twitter. He's an active Democratic donor. Omid Kordestani, director and executive chairman. He matched $530,000 with Jack Dorsey's donation to the ACLU. Then he donated thousands over the years to candidates and the DNC. Ned Siegel is their CFO. He has a history of donating to Democratic candidates. Evan Williams, former Twitter CEO, current board member. He donated $800,000 in 2016, $229,000 in 2018, $465,000 in 2020. He's apologized for Twitter's role in electing Donald Trump. Bridget Cogne, public policy director. She's in charge of government election partnerships with leading global governments and political publishers, including content strategy for Twitter. She interned and was press secretary for multiple Democratic politicians, plus worked on the Rachel Maddow show. Nicholas Basilo, senior communications manager and former communications manager for Kamala Harris. He was the press secretary for Kamala Harris. Carlos Mahoney, former director of public policy. He left to join Joe Biden's transition team, worked at the White House under the Obama administration, worked under Hillary Clinton. Brandon Borman, VP of Global Communications. He donated thousands recently to Joe Biden, was the media spokesman for the decision to fact check Trump's tweets. Those are the people at Twitter. Where are the where are all the conservatives? Here's Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg donated some to Republicans, but mainly Democrats, is currently donating all the voting boxes. So you can go to a Facebook box and just stuff your ballot in there. Sheryl Sandberg, the chief operating officer, donated primarily to Democrats, openly Democrat, and endorsed Hillary Clinton. Andy Stone, the policy communications director at Facebook, he joined the Democratic House Majority PAC. He was the press secretary to Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and the press secretary to Senator Barbara Boxer. Anna McAndrew, she is the global policy manager. She's in charge of global elections. She worked for Joe Biden, donated to Biden in 2020 and Clinton in 2016. Brian Rice, the director of public policy, was the legislative assistant for John Kerry for 3 years. Probir Mehta is the global public policy person. She was in the office of the U.S. Trade Representative, executive office for the president, for 7 years when the president was Obama. You also have Jessica Hertz, former director and associate general counsel. She oversees the ethical issues and on transition team for Joe Biden. She worked on principal deputy counsel in that office under the Vice President Biden from 2012 to 2014. I don't know, Stu, have you noticed a trend with all of the people that are in senior positions at Facebook or Twitter?
Almost too far right is what I picked
up
that's there.
One way of looking at it, and I'm sure the press would look at it that way.
You think there'd be some, this is a crazy concept, diversity. Diversity of thought, diversity of...
No.
It's just not, it's not necessary.
No, well, they actually, I believe, think they are diverse because they might have, you know, some Hillary Clinton supporters in there. So you go from Antifa to Hillary Clinton.
Wow.
Yeah, so they have the whole spectrum there.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was listening to somebody, some podcast, I think, and it was a liberal who was talking about this and kind of complaining about the woke culture in that sort of world. And it explained it, I thought, in an interesting way, where liberals and the people on the left inherently understand that if you don't have any black people or Hispanics or women at a workplace, there's a lack of diversity. You're not getting all those different viewpoints. They inherently get that. And if you were to say, I'm just going to hire all white people, they would inherently say that's a terrible thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, when it comes to actual differences in thought, not skin color, which is, it doesn't necessarily form your viewpoints, your actual differences in thought, they can't understand why you'd even include someone who's just moderately left, let alone a conservative. You don't want any of those people around. Everyone has to agree. Everyone has to understand that sexual preference is now an insult. Like, all of these things have to, there's these hardcore rules. You can't break any of them. Anyone with any different opinion needs to be, expunged, as Keith Olbermann would explain. That's not healthy.
I like the way you overpronounced it, too.
Expunged. There's like an extra G in there? What happened? But that is, I think that's the way that they think. And, I think you'd think that these social media companies, who, again, get half of their money from conservatives clicking on ads, would understand this and want to please that audience. But they don't seem to be doing that.
Well, because it's about race. The only thing that is diverse is sexual, dare I say, preference.
Oh, my gosh.
And race.
You were about to say it.
Right.
Sexual orientation.
Yeah. That's the only differences. They don't think that a difference in opinion is important. A difference in opinion has to be stopped because they know the truth. And the truth is all white people are racist. So I see people by race. I mean, they are by definition racist. Now, not the, you know, Klan sort of racist, I don't think. Although when it comes to Jews, many on the left are the Nazi kind of racist. However, they are racist because that's the only filter they see. They disagree with Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
And what Martin Luther King said was, judge me by who I am, what I do, what my character is. Judge me by my skills and my talent and my character and what I can do.
They used to love sexual preference, and now they hate it. Look at the writings of Ibram Kendi, who outwardly explains this and says you should be discriminating against white people. I think he basically describes it as the people who created the system. But he's, you know, implicit and explicit at times saying that that's just white people, right? So the only way to solve those problems that he sees from the past, real and imagined, is to, as he says, discriminate in the future. Discriminate in the present. Discriminate. He's advocating for discrimination. And his book is on the shelves at every Target in America right now. Mm-hmm. On the end cap, by the way, in most of them. So if you're going by, if you're walking through a Target, you're going to see Anti-Racist Baby by Ibram X. Kendi. And these are the things he's advocating and targeting babies with. Babies.
Well, white babies.
Yeah, because, you know, white babies, that's true. I guess babies of color do not need this information.
Right.
But white because babies
they can't be racist. But right. White babies are racist from birth, so you have to start teaching them that.
These are unhealthy practices, Glenn, for society.
They really are. It is everything. If you were looking to destroy a society, which they are, it's everything that you would say you wanted to do. I mean, I saw the Communist Party USA from the 1920s, their list of things they felt they had to do to destroy America. It's everything that's happening right now. Everything that's happening right now. Oh, that's a conspiracy theory. Really? Because there were like 15 things on the list, and every one of them have been done. What are the odds that just mysteriously happened that way? Nothing was done to stop the destruction of America by its foes internally, but all of the foes list, that was done? Wow. Mm. What a coincidence. I'm going to reel straight up with you. And this one's easy for me to say, I guess, because I'm going to couch it with, I'm always wrong with timing. But everybody knows this one is coming. But I believe in my lifetime, and I think within the next 15 years, I think these are the beginnings of the days that have been foretold. I believe that we could see the days of tribulation in the next 5 years. I obviously don't know. People have been planning or some of them been looking forward to these days for 3,000 years. But evil is washing over the world right now. And it is not going to help anything. And you will not, I believe, we will not be counted as helpers, if you will, if we are engaging in violence. That is different than protecting your family, your home. But if you're thinking, and I don't believe you are, but for those who are thinking about, I'm going to get a group together, that is not the way to go. I urge you. To go with a group of people, and first thing you say is, we're not talking about a militia. We are talking about supporting you. I want you to go to your sheriff and I want you to let them know that you support them. If they are a sheriff that understands that they are the last wall of defense between a government that is out of control and the people, they don't answer to the governor. They don't answer to the mayors. They don't answer to anyone except the people that put them in office. I want you to meet and know who your sheriff is and go there peacefully, because they are probably all keyed up in some places. But you support your sheriffs. If you are looking at an election where a sheriff is up for re-election, that may be the second most important vote that you make. Know who you're voting for. Know who the sheriff is. The Fortitude Ranch camps in West Virginia and Colorado are opening November 3rd to protect members. This is according to the outlet, citing the company's October newsletter. In addition, Fortitude Ranch expects possible looting and violence that could turn into clashes that spread far and wide and last a long time. That's whether Donald Trump or Joe Biden wins the election. This is the first time they have opened the Fortitude Ranch for a collapse disaster. And they say, though it may not end up being so, we consider the risk of violence that could escalate in irrational, unpredictable ways into widespread loss of law and order, and we feel that it is real. This is a camp where for $1,000 you can go as go to these camps as a refuge in the event of a societal collapse. This is the first time they're opening it for that, and they're opening it November 3rd. You have about 3 weeks to prepare for insanity, and it may not happen, and I pray it doesn't happen. But I can't recommend highly enough that you prepare food storage, that you prepare your home to be secure, that you have met with your family and your children, and you know where you're supposed to meet if there's a problem. You prepare financially. And then you've got to do your homework and prepare educationally. Do you have a physical copy of the Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of Independence? You need that. Are you prepared spiritually? Do you have a relationship good enough? As I told you 15 years ago, there's going to come a time when you're going to need that communication between you and the spirit so strong that if the spirit says, stop, don't go there, turn around, that you do it. Please, if you haven't started working on that, do it. Ask for advice and obey the advice. The voice will get stronger in you. You also have to prepare mentally. We are going to be leaving things behind us. I mean that historically. I think things are going to change. Don't pine for the good old days. Look forward to the future. It brings me no joy telling you these things, but they are serious. The left is serious. There are people that want you to be afraid and will control you. My daughter has asked me over and over again, Dad, what does societal collapse mean? What does it look like? The Walking Dead without the zombies. If society collapses, there will be militias and gangs, and they will not be usually for the Constitution. Remember, white supremacists and these militia gangs like they had up in Michigan, they don't agree with America. Now, they may say they're for the Constitution, but you can't be for the Constitution and anarchy and Black Lives Matter. You just can't. Know exactly who you're standing with. I don't recommend that you get into any of these things. And it is going to be seductive if there is great societal collapse. I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's going to be widespread unrest, but I don't think societal collapse is coming. Thank God. And anybody who says, you know, we just got to burn the whole thing down and really mean burn the whole thing down, I want you to know that when you get rid of the police and you get rid of society, it's not like this. It will break into groups and gangs. And if you are in the wrong place at the wrong time, you will be controlled by whoever, and there's no help coming. That's what societal collapse looks like. And there are those that want it. Now, there is a new story out today that I don't believe the numbers, but it's from Reason, and I think it's worth reading. It is, are Americans provoking each other into political violence? The proportion of Americans believing that it is at least somewhat justifiable for their political party to use violence to achieve its goals has risen from fewer than 1 in 3 3 years ago to 1 in 3 now, according to the polls. Meanwhile, predictions abound of disruptions around the election and fighting in the years to come. After months of social unrest and with the country's political factions intent on mutual destruction, the U.S. looks at risk becoming a failing democracy, which disputes are settled in the streets. God help us. So you know, if this happens, if we become a failing democracy, our dollar is no longer the world reserve currency, and it becomes worthless. These things could happen overnight. Like a growing number of prominent American leaders and scholars, we are increasingly anxious that this country is headed towards the worst post-election crisis in a century and a half. That puts you at the Civil War. Larry Diamond of the Hoover Institute said, Lee Dutman of New America, Todd Lindbergh of the Hudson Institute, Nathan P. Calmore of Louisiana State University, Lillian Mason of the University of Maryland, they penned a piece in Politico. Our biggest concern is that a disputed presidential election, especially if there are close contests in a few swing states, or if one candidate denounces the legitimacy of the process, it could generate violence and bloodshed. Drawing on polling data, the authors point support for the use of violence to achieve political goals has risen from 8% for both Democrats and Republicans to 33% and 36%. In September, 44% of Republicans, 41% of Democrats said there would be at least a little justification for violence if the other's party nominee wins the election. An Australian former Australian Special Forces officer and Bush Jr. administration counterterrorism advisor warned America may be in what the CIA guide to the analysis of insurgency calls incipient insurgency. People don't know that it only takes 2 to 5% of a population to want to engage in violence and civil wars. It's only 2 to 5% that actually commit the violence, but that is all it takes. You are seeing the violence now coming from the left. You are going to see a concerted effort to do that. Notice how the media is already softening the ground. They're calling all violence from the right. It's not. It's coming from the left. They're already starting to soften the ground. They're already starting to. The New York Times Daily did a report today and talked to a leader, or was it NPR? Talked to a leader at the Pentagon. And they're already talking about which way will the military go. The military is now going through classes on the Constitution. These things may come. We are 3 weeks away. As Keith Olbermann said, it's not just election night. As he said, quote, "That is just the beginning."